This tape will become part of the Scandinavian Immigrant Experience collection at Pacific Lutheran University. The date today is October 6, 1982. The interview is taking place in the home of Sverre Halvorsen and is being conducted by Maureen Nesvig. This is in Gig Harbor. What is your full name, please?
Sverre Halvorsen.
A middle name?
Aye.
And when were you born, Mr. Halvorsen?
28th of November, 1895.
And where were you born?
Trondheim.
Okay, and on the western coast of Norway.
That's right.
In the city. And what were your parents' names?
My father's name was Axel Halvorsen. My mother's name was Pauline Halvorsen. That's he got married.
Her maiden name?
Peterson. I almost forgot it.
Okay. Now, if you'd tell me a little bit about your parents, what was your father's occupation?
Originally, he was a violin player in the symphony in Trondheim. But we had a big fire, and he lost everything. I myself was thrown out of a window in a blanket. I was only 2 years old.
My goodness.
After that, my father had to get a job in a railroad station, doing various jobs.
Okay. Why the change of jobs? Was the symphony was lost, or
he lost his two most costly violins in Norway. And he didn't have enough money to buy the duplicates.
I see. So then he was working with the railroad.
That's right.
Okay. And how long was he with the symphony then? For a number of years before the accident or before the fire?
I don't remember that. Mm-hmm. There was something given to me.
Mm-hmm. And was he from Trondheim? Had he been born there also?
That I couldn't say.
Okay. And so, your mother, did she have an occupation, a special occupation?
No.
She was a housewife?
Just a housewife.
Okay. How many children were there in your family?
Six.
Can you give me the names?
Let's see now. I believe I was the oldest.
Take your time.
And that was Lily. And it was Peder, I guess you call it. Then was Ingrid. Then was Bjarne. Is that six?
Okay, and you were the oldest.
That's right.
Do you remember your grandparents at all? Did you know your grandparents?
Very well, I remember my grandparents. Because after the fire, I was given to my grandfather the race.
This was your paternal, your father's father?
Oh, that's my mother's father. I don't know anything about my father's parents or history of anything. And I stayed with him, that is my grandfather, until 1903 when he died. My uncle that inherited the place, my grandfather, figured, well, he's going to have his own, so he sent me back home to my parents.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you lived with your... Well, what did your grandfather do then? And
he was a pilot on the coast of Norway.
Uh-huh. What community was that? Where did you live then?
Flatanger.
Uh-huh. And whereabouts is that?
Trondheim. North to Namsos. He was brought in here, called Flatanger. And he was a pilot on this coast here.
On a ship? He
piloted ships.
Mm-hmm.
He had a small sailboat. He used to go out to the ship and go aboard, and then he took charge of the ship from there on.
Taking it along the coast.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so really from age 2 then until you were about 8 years old, you lived up north then with your grandfather.
Now I had to go back to my parents, I think in 1903, mm-hmm. shortly after my grandfather died.
Yes.
Then I stayed with my parents until 1905. Then I was farmed out, yeah. if you want to call it that way.
Okay. Going back to your grandfather, now was your grandmother there too?
Yes, yeah.
Uh-huh. What were their names?
I don't remember her.
It was Peterson, you say, was your mother's maiden name, so.
Yeah.
They were Peterson. What kind of man was your grandfather? Can you tell me a little bit about him? What do you remember? What stands out in your mind when you think about him?
He was a good man. He took care of me. And whenever he went out to pilot the ship, because there were two other men in the boat, he took me in the boat, bundled me up, and put me in the stern of the boat. And when he left the little boat and went aboard the ship, the other people kicked me to shore again.
And you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
So, let's see now. So you really had a... Why don't you go back and tell me what you know about the fire? That fire seemed to have quite a change in your life. Do you know anything about that?
No, that thing.
What type of... Were you living in... Was it in the city?
In Trunion.
And in a house, an apartment, or...?
Well, it was a two-story building in the town.
Okay.
And I was sent out of the second story window in the blanket, and somebody caught me down below the window. I didn't break any legs that I know of.
Okay. And all of your other brothers, and oh, of course, you wouldn't have had, you were the first born, so maybe there weren't so many brothers and sisters yet then, but nobody was hurt in the fire, or?
Not that I know of, no.
And so your first memories then are from living with your grandfather.
Yeah.
Up there, okay. Can you describe the home there, growing up in north of Namsos? What?
Well, it was a two-story house, and, well, let's see now. The floor plan, suppose here's the front. Here's the bay down in here. Here's the front. Go down like this, and here, there was a little, what they call, bush log, a lean-to here.
How do you say that again?
Bush log, yeah. Slog means laid-to.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, it laid against the house.
Oh, okay. What was kept there? What was that for, used for?
That was to keep the cold air out of the house when you open the door.
Mm. Something like a porch or something like that.
Yes, we have storage, wood stacked out there, and still a lot in ends.
Okay. And so the house looked out onto the water.
Yes. And right here in the so-called front room was my grandfather's bed, right in here. Here was the dining room table, right in here. Then was the space in here. Then out here went the kitchen. That was a big stove out there, and they cooked on it, and it warmed up the house, and so on and so forth. Then over here, there's the side of the house. Here was a door coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a door here that led upstairs. And Let's see now. A lot of bunks up there.
How many people lived there then with you and your grandparents?
My uncle.
Okay. Was this the place that your father had been born? Did he come from this place?
No.
Oh, this was your... I'm sorry, this was your mother's family. Yes, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Your mother was from this place.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's where she had
been. The only one that lived there was my grandfather, my grandmother until she died, and my uncle.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And my grandfather, grandmother died, what do I say, around 1900, stuff like that. And my grandfather and my uncle.
Mm-hmm. So... You, did you start school then in that place?
No, that was too young.
Too young.
We did not start the introductory kindergarten schools.
Mm-hmm.
We were around 6 and 7 years old when we started school.
I see.
Because we learned quite a bit at home, mm-hmm, from the parents.
Mm-hmm.
So the teacher wouldn't have to worry about if he knew 1, 2, 3, 4 of the alphabet or anything like that. We knew that.
You knew that.
Yeah.
Okay. That's something that did your grandparents teach you those things, or?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And my uncle helped too.
Mm-hmm. Was that a large community? Were there many other people around?
No, just us on an island.
On an island. How did you get your supplies and keep...
There was another island over here, and there was a big store here. That was a big place. All ships came in there, and my uncle used to work over there in the warehouse and so on and so forth.
Okay. All right. What do you... So you went back then to Trondheim when you were... After your grandfather died?
That's right.
And then how did life go for you there? Did you begin school there? And,
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what was that like in Trondheim?
Good.
What was the schooling? How, describe the school or the...
We walked from here probably a half a mile or so. Walked into the schoolyard, fence around, like this school building here. Upstairs, downstairs.
Mm-hmm. A big school then.
A pretty good sized school. A lot of playground room, playroom in here on the ground, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And my teacher's name was Anderson. I remember her because she gave me the devil one time.
What happened?
You know, on days off, we used to walk from our place across the bridge to another part of the town. Everybody was organized in this way that you walk on the right hand seat side of anything. Same thing. Well, little kid, you know, I was going across there. My teacher came this way. I didn't see her. I didn't tip my cap. Oh, did I get it the next time in school?
That made her angry.
No, she wanted to teach me to be respectful.
Mm-hmm. And was that common?
You betcha, that was important. Even men would tip their caps or hats to another man on the other side of the street, or even when you pass it.
Mm-hmm. So that was a custom then?
Yeah, that was a custom.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember any other, customs like that? Anything stand out in your mind from growing up in Norway or in Trondheim there?
No, the only thing that I can think of is that you were obedient to your parents,
mm-hmm,
or your elders,
mm-hmm,
and their teachers. Oh, you had better behave yourself.
Okay, so it was very strict for children then.
Yes, it was.
Yes. What, go ahead.
Other than that, there was nothing. You had to do work.
Mm-hmm. What type of work did you do?
While at home, it was my job to go in the wood yard, that is in Trondheim now, mm-hmm. to pick up scrap wood. And quite a few ships came in from England with coal. And they unloaded coal there on a pier, and the lumps would scatter all over. And I had a bucket, and I got a hold of what I thought was the head man of the group, you know. Could I have a lump of coal? Could I have, or in the wood yard, could I have this? Sure, go ahead. They even had a hatchet, and they chopped the wood out of the frozen ice.
And this was for your family's fire?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, where was your family living now then? Still in Trondheim, in a house?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. An apartment? Or?
That's right.
Okay. Was it, and then you had other brothers and sisters now?
Yeah.
There in Trondheim?
Yeah.
And, let's see. What was Trondheim like? Can you describe the city in the early 1900s? When you think of Trondheim, what do you think about?
Let's see.
A big city?
Yes, fairly good city. We lived on Innherredsveien, the first 53. We go northward, and big farm back there. And up here would be a high hill, kind of a rocky mountain, you might call it. The kids used to walk up there and look down over the city and the bay and the sound. Mm-hmm. And there was a fort up there. Mm-hmm. Soldiers walking the top of it, you know, so on the fort. And another thing I remember quite well, we respected the policemen. I used to walk along the policemen and hang on to them. Excuse me.
It's okay, that's fine.
It was our habit, kids, mm-hmm. matter of fact, to respect the policemen.
Okay.
And whenever anything was needed for our kids, go to policemen. I'll relate later on how I taught my kids the same way.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, good. So, tell me a little bit then about how your life went. Now, you went back to Trondheim, and then you say you left again in a couple of years?
Yeah, I left in 1905, yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And then where were you living?
Living on a place not too far from my grandfather's place.
Uh-huh.
His island was here, and I was then raised here. I could see the island right across the water.
Okay. And so what were you doing there then? Are you living with relatives or?
Oh, no. I was, you might say, what, a foster home or something?
Foster home?
Yeah.
Okay, foster home.
In other words, I had to work my keep there.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Split wood in the summertime, go out and herd the cows way up in the hills, you know. And then in the fall, when the herring season was up, then go out there and fish herring.
Mm.
Salt herring. And fish salt herring and then all kinds of stuff.
So you were back up to the northern area and right on the water and back in the country. And you finished school?
I used to have a chart of the area, but I don't know where it is now. But
and what's the name of that place? What was the name of the place then where you were living then?
Bjørgan.
Bjørgan.
Yeah. Okay. Bjørgan.
Okay. Does that have a meaning or?
No.
Just it's a place. Okay. So then, tell me how your life went. You were living there, and then that's where you grew up.
Yeah, I was confirmed, and I had to stay 1 year after the confirmation to pay him back for them bringing me up to these years.
Mm-hmm. So you lived there from about 10 years old on then?
10 years old, and I guess I was 15 or almost 16, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then you went to work on your own?
No, I wouldn't say I worked on my own, because in the meantime, the man at this place bought himself a sailing schooner. Mm-hmm. And he had planned to go up to North Cape to fish. But he could not get anyone to really go with him. And the lady at the place, he begged and begged for me to go. If I didn't go, he couldn't go. Well, then I says, okay, I'll go. And we sailed up there, and we fished it that winter. That's when I nearly drowned.
You nearly drowned?
Yeah.
What happened then?
Well, we were anchored out in the harbor. I went ashore to get some groceries, including a gallon of kerosene for the lamps. And rowing back, I could hear a noise in the background, a hissing noise. It got a little stronger, so I turned around to look, and sure enough, here came a great big willowaw. You know what they are? Well, that's a turbulence, air turbulence. That picks up the water and just throw it all
like
over.
Like a whirlwind. Huh?
Yeah, something like that. So I started to swing the boat up to get the bow into the thing. But I wasn't able to make it, and right over.
Into the icy water?
Yeah, it was icy now, I'm telling you. And I was able to get on top of the keel. And we all carried sheath knives there. You went to church with sheath knives, you went to bed with sheath knives, and you were not without a sheath knife no matter what and where. And the idea with these boats, they had, you know what oakum is? Mm-hmm. Well, it's a piece of tarred rope, split up and tore to pieces, you might say, just like cotton. That's what you use for a plug in a boat. And then, if you capsize like that, you're supposed to take the sheath knife and dig this oakum, the plug out. Mm-hmm. Let the air out and let it settle down a little bit. And then you're supposed to take the knife and drive it into the planking and hang on to it.
So you did that?
Yeah, you're darn right I did. And the crew on the schooner, they figured, well, now, heck, the kids should be back. So they came on deck, and I just happened to be laying right in the moonlight from the ship.
This was at night?
Oh, yeah. So, my God, did they come out? They passed me, or they pointed an oar to me, then they pushed me off the boat.
But you were rescued then?
Oh, yeah. I went cold.
How long were you out there?
Oh, I don't know. It seems like maybe 3-4 hours to me, but probably 15, 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. It was so cold I couldn't holler. I tried to holler, but I couldn't get a sound out of me. Mm-hmm. Well, then in the summer, then we sailed back home. So, after that, I got myself a job on a lumber schooner, sailing schooner. From Namsos, we sailed lumber up the north coast of Norway. Mm. Bode, Tromsø, and all that kind of places. You know those places, haven't you? You remember the names?
Of course.
Yeah. So, one trip home, that is, we were in Namsos, so I was going to go back to where I was brought up. So happened, aunt of mine from Trondheim was on this steamer. And said, hey, what the heck are you doing here? Yeah. I told him what I was doing. So he said, why don't you go to America? He says, I have no money for that. I just started sailing there. And you have an uncle in America, haven't you? I says, I don't know. Never heard of him. And I guess about 2 months afterwards, what in the heck happened? But here comes a ticket on me from Namsos for to Seattle.
And who sent that?
Huh?
Who sent that?
My aunt got in touch with my uncle.
Mm-hmm. You had an uncle in Seattle that you didn't know about?
Not that I would consider or think about seriously. So, I made one more trip, and I got ready for sailing here.
Had you, before you ran into your aunt, it was just all happened by chance.
Yeah, I didn't know she was on there, and I don't know just how in the heck she recognized me even.
Huh, and you were about 17 at this time?
Just about 17, yeah. A little over 17 now.
And you hadn't thought about America before that?
No.
You expected to stay there working
alone? Let's see. It may be I thought about it because right from this Bjørgan place, over here was another little settlement, and two of those boys had gone to America.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one came back on a visit. And he said, will you plan to go to America someday? And I said, no, that's before I got the ticket. See? So, well, I said, America in my mind, but I knew it would take money too.
Mm-hmm. So then you got the ticket.
I got the ticket, sailed, and made one trip all the way up to Buda. Came back, and then I got ready to...
Mm-hmm. What, did you have a waiting period, or could you just go as soon as you got your ticket?
The ticket was specified for a certain date.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. So then tell me, when you got the ticket, then you were ready to go. I mean, what was in your thought about going to America? Did you think, why not, or what did you...
Well...
What was your thinking on that?
I was just going, that's all.
Just going.
Yeah.
Okay. So then how did your trip go? Tell me about where you leave from. And
I left from Trondheim,
mm-hmm.
on the Wilson line. And we got into Hull, got on a train, went across England to Liverpool. And there we stayed, I guess, for about a week.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was just lovely and dandy.
Were you traveling alone? You
yeah.
left Trondheim alone?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you remember how you felt when you left Norway? Did you think that was the last time you'd see Norway? Or?
No, I never gave it a thought. Didn't think about not seeing it again or say goodbye or anything.
Just took off?
Yeah, just took off.
Okay. Did you take many things with you? What did you think you needed to be prepared for? Did you take a lot of belongings or a few belongings?
Oh, we had I bought a trunk. And I put a few clothes in there. And my uncle wrote me later on and asked me to get him a pair of a Norwegian sea boots. The short, you know, just about halfway up the leg. I bought a pair for myself, and that was it.
Okay.
I was supposed to wear them to scuff up the soles a bit.
Is that what, that's what he told you to do?
Yeah, to get away from the customs. They're, you know, look at the sole. Oh, you've been wearing that. They're not new then, are they? No, because there's scratches on the soles.
Okay. And you knew you were going to Seattle.
Oh, yeah.
Did you know anything about Seattle?
Not a thing.
You did? Okay.
The only thing I knew about Seattle was that I was supposed to go to Pier 6. Okay. That's a foot of University Street, Pacific, Nat and Twine.
And that's all you knew?
That was on a piece of paper.
Okay.
And that was my arrival address in Seattle.
What year was this you're leaving?
It's 1913 now.
And what time of year was it when you came over?
4th of May, at 5 o'clock in the morning.
That's when you arrived?
In Seattle.
Okay, so you really left Norway in April?
I believe I arrived in New York on the 27th of April.
So it was in April.
Probably took us 6-7 days coming across and so on and so forth.
Okay, now, why did you lay over in England for a week?
To wait for the ship.
Okay, had to wait for the ship. Yeah. Were there other immigrants waiting, or?
Oh, yeah, the hotel was full.
You were in a hotel?
Yeah.
What was it like to be in England? And was it really a foreign experience for you, or?
No, it didn't seem to bother me much. Okay. I just didn't go too far away so to get lost.
And what was the name of your ship then? Do you remember coming over?
Carmania. That's the name of the ship.
Tell me about that crossing.
It was rough for days, and other times were real nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, how many was it? It was a big ship, would you say?
Oh, yeah.
And who were the other passengers?
Well, some were from Turkey, some from Italy, from Austria, and some from Ireland.
All over.
And the Italians were the deck below us, because we could tell. There was a strange odor to me, garlic.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You had never encountered garlic before?
No.
No garlic in Norway?
No.
What were your accommodations like on the ship? Where did you stay?
Six in the room.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And were you with other Norwegians then, or?
Yes, I believe there was one Swede, or two, I forget.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we could talk to each other.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember by any chance the cost of your ticket to come over?
I don't remember that.
Okay.
I remember one thing, that I had to pay my uncle about $100 and some. Now, whether that was part of the ticket or the whole ticket at that time of the year,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't say.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the day that you arrived. How did things go?
Got in the morning. And the health department came aboard, and we just had to kind of walk by them and smile at them and so on and so forth. No sour faces, just be happy-go-lucky.
Had somebody told you that?
Yes.
Somebody.
Well, of course, the way we were brought up, we never had sour faces. See? If you met somebody, so smile at them. Sometimes I do the same thing in here and look at my book, they have two pictures. Sour face.
Okay.
And then we went to Ellis Island in the ferry boat.
What was that like, Ellis Island?
It was nothing but mixed up conglomeration. One group over here, another group over in here, and each group have certain numbers or letters on the breast. And then somebody will hold up these numbers that you had. So you better stick close to that number. And the same thing with the other group. Mm-hmm. Now, we bound for the West Coast had a certain number. I don't remember what it is now. But this group stayed together and watched that a big number.
I see.
And then as a Lutheran minister came around and talked to you. And I don't know what group came around with pies, small pies like this, you know. Because there was no place to eat and they get a little hungry.
Mm-hmm.
That's my first taste of pie.
Oh,
well, that evening, he got on the train. And you were talking about what did I bring with me? Well, I brought a little hand bag, same as a, shopping bag.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's made out of cloth. Had a leg of mutton, dried mutton, and hardtacks. That was to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a sheath knife.
Still had your knife.
Still had a sheath knife. I carved over a chunk of meat, chew it, take a hardtack, chew it. Matter of fact, I have some hardtacks here now. But I haven't got the leg of mutton.
I just wonder, how big a knife is a sheath knife like that? What?
Getting a?
You have one?
Yeah, I guess. There's one out here in the...
Well, where's the good one? It's usually right here.
No, they're in that drawer of hair's nose.
Here?
No. Here. Look at my finger. The top drawer over there, in the back.
So you were prepared for the train trip with your own food then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Way in the back there.
What do you call this?
Knickerbocker.
And this is hardtack?
Uh-huh.
And this is what you had on the train?
Yeah.
May I have a little taste?
Sure, go ahead.
Come on, this comes from Polesbo. And what? Oh, yes. What's the best way to eat this? What do you eat it with?
Soup.
Soup?
Fish?
Mm-hmm.
Or anything.
Anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Put butter on it, though.
Yeah, put butter on it. Okay, so... So there you are on the train, and I always wondered how people made it from the ship to the train without getting lost, but you say they assigned you a number.
Oh, you...
And you stayed with that number. And so that's how your group to the West Coast, you mean, if you knew you were going to Seattle, you stayed Okay. So, just getting through New York, did you have any impression that you remember from New York? I mean, your first impression of America, or were you... aware of anything like that?
No.
Okay.
You left the ship and you went right into that big barn.
That's what, in Ellis Island, it was a big barn?
Well, that's the building there.
Yeah.
There.
Yeah. Okay.
Compartments of every description and so on and so forth.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about the train trip now, coming across the country.
Oh, I kind of... taken up with the vast area of the country. And the train didn't go too fast, so I was able to count the telephone poles from one town to another. That's why I kept myself busy. And then you went through the farm country, and you talk about pigs. Good God. They were hogs of every description. They are red hogs and black hogs and so on and so forth. That's something I never saw in the old countries. They're all white pigs there.
Mm-hmm.
And
so that made an impression.
Yes, it did.
How long did that trip take across the country?
From the 27th the evening of the 27th of April, uh-huh. the 4th of May,
okay.
at 5 in the morning.
See? And you came right into Seattle?
Came right into Seattle.
Uh-huh. Did you come to the train station there?
Yeah.
Was it?
King Street Station.
And then how did it go from there?
From there on, I took my little bag with me. I went upstairs. I looked around and I couldn't read anything, couldn't make out anything. But I knew that I had to get to this pier. And one of my uncles back there, had been in this country before, so he told me what a pier was. Mm-hmm. And the name of it, so on and so forth. So I had to, get to the waterfront someplace. So I told you about the policeman. I spotted the guy there that I recognized as a policeman because of the uniform. So I stuck this piece of paper right in his nose, like this, respectfully, sort of to. Uh-huh. Looked at me and so on and so forth. So he took me by the arm and put me up against the wall of the building. And he was looking up Jackson Street. And pretty soon, he saw something there, so he came over and got me by the arm, took me over to the conductor, and he told him something. So the conductor set me back in this corner of this open street. Do you remember the streetcars back in 1913?
I think they have a new one in Seattle. It's like a trolley car, kind of?
Yeah.
They electric, did. Yeah.
Okay, so you're put into a trolley car, streetcar?
Yeah. And then when he got up to a certain place, he went to turn the corners and kept going so on and so forth. And finally, he said, so he pointed that way. He stopped in the middle of the block, So I go up to the corner, and there was Pacific Net and Twine, great big letters. And Peter 6. Oh, yeah, I tell it, darling. But it was so early in the morning that it wasn't open yet, and there wasn't a soul in sight. But I stayed there. And finally, some man came down and opened up a big gate alongside of the building itself. And I kind of eased up to them and I could hear him talk. And I understood what they were saying. They were Norwegians. So they walked along the pier, walked along the building, and down the front, there was a fish boat there. So they started to unload fish, and I was standing there, watching it. And finally I says, you get the fish out there, pointing out to the sound? And he looked at me and says, when did you come over? Oh, I said about an hour or so ago. Who's going to meet you? Well, this is my uncle, Ed Querner. He's supposed to meet me here. Have you had breakfast? And I said, no. He said, come on. So he took me into a restaurant up at First Avenue someplace. He ordered. Got a platter this big, great big piece of ham, 2 eggs, potatoes. I looked at it, because I was going to cut it in half, give it to him. I was going to take an egg, give it to him. Here, he says, that's yours. That's your first breakfast in Seattle. Oh, boy. So I waited and waited. The store opened that, of course, and there were Norwegians in there, too, and they knew my uncle.
What was your uncle's name?
Edwin Querner. And they didn't know where he lived. They knew he was out in Ballard someplace. You know where that is. Yeah. But he didn't come around all day long. It was late in the afternoon to begin to wonder, now, when the heck am I going to stay, and so on and so forth. So one fellow said, okay, you come with me. So we got on the streetcar and went all the way out, Ballard, Market Street and 24th Avenue. They had an idea that he was living on the other side of the canal here. So they said, you go down to this boat shop, or a boat landing. It's a Swedish fellow that set people across, you know, so and so forth. He did tell him Ed Koenig. So he set me across.
I'm going to turn the tape over before we run out on this side, and then we'll go on with finding your uncle.
So I started to walk along the beach. Quite a few houses here and there, you know. So I says, Ed Koenig?
You would ask people along the way?
Yeah, I ask every house by here, see if they knew him. And the name and the address I had to go out to work. Go on, the next one. So I go to the next one until I got right around the bay like this. Went into a house there. And Ed Koenig, they were Norwegians. And Kristiansund. Yeah, he lived next door in the scow house. Are you a day early? He said. He's supposed to meet you tomorrow. But he's uptown, though, getting a mattress for you. That's when I had my first cup of coffee, and I don't know whether I had a pie or a donut or some jab, nothing. Yeah. And finally he came.
So you found your own way to your uncle's place there.
Oh, you're right.
No, black is just fine. So you're, without running into other Norwegians, you think you would have had difficulty because of the language, or?
Yes, I would have, because the only thing I knew was the name of him. I didn't know where he lived, and he was a bachelor, had no family.
Okay.
So it was just persistence, hiking and walking, that I found some people that knew him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that you hiked all evening that day, was it? Or?
No, I guess about a mile and a half I walked.
Mm-hmm.
You know where the lock is now? Mm-hmm. All right, that's what I went across. They were building a lock at the time. And from there on, all the way to the very end of the canal, that's how I walked.
Okay.
If you've been out there, you know how far it is.
So then your uncle came and...
Oh, yeah. He took me in, cooked supper of some sort. I don't remember what it is now. Next day, we were more or less sitting around getting acquainted. He was asking a lot about Norway and so on and so forth. I think he came to Seattle a day or so after the fire.
Hmm.
Has been here a long time. Then I couldn't sit around and do nothing, but two fellows living next door. No, they were connected with this place where I got my first cup of coffee, the Johnson. So they were building a railroad bridge across the canal. You know where that railroad bridge is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Out here quite a ways, past the yacht club now. I don't know what you call it this. But you know where the yacht club is now, outside there.
Mm-hmm.
From there on, they were trying to raise the ground level, you know, see, so you get onto the bridge. But being that the track was close to the water, we had to bring in rocks and shrubs of every description, you know, to keep the dirt from washing in. So that was my job. And they had wheelbarrows, and some of them were carrying the rocks by hand, you know. And I picked up a great big son of a gun. Figured on myself, really. Now, one fellow looked at me and said, "Hey, kid, cut it out. Use the wheelbarrow for that." Well, I was pretty husky, even though I was 17 and a half. I worked there for about 4 to 5 days, and then they shifted and so on. A summer I went fishing my uncle on Lake Cape Flattery.
Hmm. Your uncle was a fisherman?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Fished with him until, I think, end of September. Then he got me a job on a tugboat, and the owner of the tugboat was brother to the lady at the place where I was brought up on Juragan.
So there was a connection there.
Yeah.
What did you do on the tugboat then?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What kind of job is that?
Oh, they're working the deckhand and steering and so on and so forth.
In Seattle?
Yeah, right to Cape Flattery on, or near Bay, up mm-hmm. to Seattle and mm-hmm. so on. Doing all kinds of tow jobs, every description you might say. Until, in, I think it was the early January, then the business got so poor that he couldn't hire me anymore. Because, if you remember, in 1913-14, they changed the administration, and Wilson got in on the Democratic side, and wasn't Teddy Roosevelt at that time, it was somebody else in the Republican Party. But anyway, business went come to pieces. I got laid off. I had a few dollars saved up. I got myself a room at the YMCA. And I went to night school. Mm-hmm. I saved out a few dollars to eat on in the cafeteria then at the YMCA. Well, I was looking for jobs every day, walking around. But the YMCA couldn't do anything for me, and...
What were you doing at night school? What type of school?
Picking up yes instead of ya.
You were learning English?
Yeah.
You went, okay. Did you ever have any difficulties or big difficulties, anything you remember with the language difference? How much of a problem was that for you?
Oh... Sometimes I used a W when I wasn't supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
And the TH sometimes had me troubled.
When you first got here, before you started night school, did you manage to get along? Or did you try to learn English? Did you pick it up?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I picked it up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. As best I could.
And but you had contact with other Norwegians, though, so you could...
Yeah, mm-hmm. Especially around the waterfront.
Lots of Norwegians around the waterfront?
Oh, yeah. Because that's what I was hunting for jobs.
Mm-hmm. So you went to night school and learned English.
Yeah. Then I'd run out of money, you might say. So I bought myself a loaf of bread, a pound of butter, and drank water out of the faucet in the room. Pretty soon, half a pound of butter, a loaf of bread. Half a pound of butter, half a loaf of bread. And then I used to walk around the waterfront, and there were good people down there, so I got a chance to pick up a few kernel of corn to chew on. Stick a handful in the pocket and so on. And then finally I got myself, still hunting jobs. There was a steamer in at the Moran shipyard. That's around for 43 pier now, mm-hmm. something like that. I went aboard and asked him to get a job. He was a Swedish mate. So he told me that I had to go to Kopek Fish Company, way down at Wall Street. You know how far that is?
How far is that?
A couple miles.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite that far, a mile and a half anyway. And a mate on the ship told me that I had to see the port captain for the fish company. So I got in touch with him. His name was Anderson. And he happened to be from a place about a couple of miles from my grandfather's place in Norway.
This was a fish company?
Mm-hmm. It was a boat fishery at that time. So I got myself a job. And the skipper happened to be from Trondheim.
Well, you were finding all the right places, the right
and
people.
And the second mate, Muslim place in the north part of Norway.
Hmm. What was your job then?
A deckhand.
On a big fishing ship?
Oh,
or?
Yeah, there were 40-some-odd men aboard there.
Mm-hmm. And then where did they fish then?
Up in Alaska, way up. You know what Port Lake Bank is?
No.
That's a little bit eastward of Kodiak Island and a little south of Middleton Island. You know what that is?
So you're way up there.
They fish in different places.
Mm-hmm.
And I stayed with them for quite a while. Once in a while I went in the door to fish.
Mm-hmm.
That was hard work.
Tell me about that.
You set out about 4 skates of halibut gear. And a skate at that time were 240 hook to the skate.
Mm.
There were 9 feet between the hooks. I remember those figures. And you sit in the bow of the boat, there's a dory. You have a little gurry like this, you know, like this. And there's a rubber disc over in here that the gear, the fish line go around. You just have to get drive and pull.
Now you're letting the hooks out?
No, taking them in now.
And if there's a fish on there?
Fish on there, you have to clean it and then let it go back to the man that's back here, calling it up in the skate again. You know, turning that gurdy reminds me of a minister in the old country, name of Petter Doss. Remember him? You haven't heard the name?
I think so.
He had a place north of Helgeland. Well, he got tangled up with the devil one time. And they were going to punish the devil. He had to turn the grindstone. You know what a grindstone is? Yeah. He had to turn that grindstone until he got to the end of it.
That's how you felt.
Yeah.
In the fishing boat.
Yeah. So then, I fished there until, I think it was latter part of April in 1916. And a mate, that was a second mate, he got himself a job, a skipper on a whaling boat. He asked me if I would go with him. I said, sure, I'll go. Anything. Because this fishing steam that was laying up for annual overhaul. And we didn't know just how long it would be. So I took the whaling job.
And you went whaling?
Mm-hmm.
And where did that take you?
Up to Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes. Up to Fort Armstrong, what the name of the place.
Mm-hmm. Did you encounter many Norwegians in your work fishing and whaling?
Oh, the gunner on this whaler was from Norway. He goes back to Norway every winter and then come back here for the season. because it was the Norway Pacific Whaling Company I was working for.
What type of whales?
Oh, stay whales. They were on the small side. Then a finback, a little longer. They run around 60 feet. And they were humpback, they run around 45. The sperm whales, let's see. Yeah, sperm whales are divided into three sections. One third from the tail to the hump on the back. One third from here up to just after the blowhole. Then a third from there up to the end of the nose. Then we had blue whales. They run around 80-some feet.
Mm. So all different kinds of whales.
Yeah. So I made a few dollars. Came back to Seattle. Got on the steamer. A sound steamer, you know, from Seattle, goes over to Polpo. You know what that is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the mate asked me what I was going to do this winter. I told him, well, get myself a job. First of all, I like to have a job that also give me a chance to go to night school. He said, why don't you join the Coast Guard? My uncle wanted me to join the Coast Guard. Because in their day, when we fished that one year, the Snohomish, beautiful ship painted white and everything was nice and orderly. No hard work the way it seemed to me. So I said, you should be on that ship there. So the mate on this passenger boat, why don't you on the Coast Guard? I says, fine. But how do I go about it? All right, I'll give you a name of an officer on the Snohomish, which is now in Winslow. So, I walk to Winslow in a couple of days, go aboard and find this officer. He happened to be a German. I showed him the slip of paper that this mate gave me. He was a Norwegian. Fine. I shipped in. And I wanted to stay 1 year. That was the requirement at the time. Stay 1 year. Then you get a citizen papers. That's what I wanted.
Now you could join the Coast Guard before you were a citizen?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And being that I've been on the water for quite a bit, I got seaman first class. Ordinarily, you had to start at seaman second class.
Mm-hmm.
But I got first class. The bosun was a German. The two deck officers, deck petty officers, they were Norwegians. The master arm was German. 99%, I believe, of the crew aboard it was Europeans.
Mm-hmm. The people who had been born in Europe
and who had come
over.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, I was going to stay 1 year. But, by God, the next spring, before my enlistment was up, that was in 1916 I joined, the war broke out. Oh, I wouldn't dare quit. I stayed in the service, that is, I served during the First War, not a citizen. In June, after we came back from overseas, I went to Seattle to the courthouse with two fellows from the ship to be witnesses for me. And they had an examiner called Speed Smith. He was a mean little devil. I was in uniform, sailor's uniform. And finally the judge said to Smith, Mr. Smith, go home and get your uniform and then come back and ask questions. He didn't ask another question.
And you got your citizen then?
Oh, you bet you.
And that was 19...
That was in 1919 now.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't quit, and I didn't quit. I stayed in the service until 1947.
Okay, that was 30 years?
30 years and some.
Mm-hmm. In the Coast Guard.
Mm-hmm.
So that was your career.
Yeah.
And you were stationed in this part of the country most of the time?
In Puget Sound? Port Angeles. Oh, I was all over.
Mm-hmm.
We've been in Alaska how long? How many times?
Three times.
We were in Oakland. We've been in Eureka. Been in San Francisco. Been in New Orleans. Gulfport. I was up in New London for a while during the beginning of the Second War.
So you were primarily in this part of the country, though. But you moved all around for many years,
yeah.
with your family, too.
And then all she stayed.
I always trail along with the two kids.
That's okay.
In those days, we got 24 hours notice that we were being transferred. Now they get 6 months. You meet a person in the service, they said 6 months from now we're going here, going there. But he'd always call up on the phone and he'd say, get your sewing bag ready. I see where we're going this time. And he'd take off, and I'd come along with the kids and the
yes. Tell me, okay, now talking about your family now, tell me a little bit about your family. You met your wife in the Seattle area, or how did that go?
Well, I guess we really met her officially in Seattle, but I saw her in Port Angeles. Oh, that's a funny.
Tell me about that.
Let her tell you. Is she allowed to? No.
What? You can go ahead and tell.
Yeah. Oh, during that flu epidemic we had there in, 20th? No. When did we have that flu?
It was
1919 or 20 or something
like
that.
A bad flu epidemic?
Oh, yeah. There was a fellow on the ship that quit. He made some flower. What's there, flower lady?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But he was still on the ship. That's right. Mm-hmm. But he had married her and moved to Port Angeles. And one night I was in the ice cream parlor, and she happened to be in there. And I believe this thing over here was with her at the place. Beer parlor, isn't it? Ice cream parlor. He said something about, hey, you know who that was? She said, no, I have no idea who it is. But then, cat was let out of the bag, and I got her name, and I got her, I don't know just how I had a phone number or not, but anyway, one time we went into Seattle with the boat, I called that number. No, she wasn't home, but her ma gave me the phone number where she was at this minute. We happened to be your aunt, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So I called up there, and sure enough, she was there. She didn't hesitate at all, but invited me out there, out in the Fremont area someplace.
Woodland Park.
Woodland Park. I'd never seen Woodland Park but once before. So that was it.
And then you met?
I found her out there. Took her home. That was the end of that.
When were you married then?
She couldn't wait. Married in October.
What I was going to say, the ship went out, was gone about 6 weeks. And our address was 4711. He mailed the mail to 7411. He wrote me every day, and I thought, well, stay on every port, and I don't care, you know. So when they came back in, he phoned me, and I wouldn't believe him, so he done up all the letters in the package and mailed them to me. And that was the day I met him.
out of my aunt's, the 4th of April, on 27th of October, we were married.
Okay. And your family, you have how many children?
You mean...
You and your wife have children?
Oh, yeah. Oh, heck, yeah, a whole basket full. We have two.
What are their names?
Norman.
Mm-hmm.
And Marie.
Uh-huh. Do you have grandchildren?
Yeah, Douglas and Anne.
Mm-hmm. What are your children?
And a great grandkid. What do you call him?
David.
Great. What are your children's occupations?
Right now, they're nothing. But started out with in the army, and Marie started out with a Marine.
Mm-hmm. So they followed in your service tradition.
Yeah,
joining the service.
Norman was in the Navy, he was in the National Guard, he was in the Air Force, and he was in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, there isn't a military outfit in the United States that we hadn't been covering.
Your family was covered every service.
Yeah. She took in the Red Cross in Algiers, Louisiana.
Uh-huh. So you and your family then, well, when you retired from the Coast Guard, you settled in this area?
At the Bainbridge Island.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, I got my uncle's place.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about then your retirement out there. And why did you decide to settle there?
Well, I got that place. He had 4 acres of ground and 175 feet of waterfront.
He left it to you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He left it to me because he figured I was a halfway decent fellow. Me.
And so, did you prefer to live in the Puget Sound area, or had
I went to Alaska for how many years fishing?
Four years.
For Libby McNeil Company.
Mm. Mm-hmm. After you retired.
Oh, yeah.
You were working fishing again.
Yeah.
So your whole life has been partly on the water.
Yeah, most of it, yeah.
And do you think that comes from the way you were raised in Norway a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Oh, a Norwegian can't be away from salt water.
Okay. What about your, I'm wondering if you've been active in any of the Scandinavian organizations down through the years, or in your retirement?
No, no. We belong to Central Norway over there, but we just pay our dues and go over there.
We were very active when we lived on Bainbridge, but down here, Long and Polpo. But I go up and work in all the bazaars and the dinners and those things, and they call me every month. And I've got a whole stack of cards since I've had this eye operation, because they call me about a meeting, and I said, no, I'm going to the surgery, so they've been sending me cards.
So you and your wife then lived at the place on Bainbridge Island, and you've recently moved here to Gig Harbor.
From there to 47 to 75, we was in August 75, and we built this house here.
And moved down here.
Mm-hmm.
And your son lives next
over there.
Okay. And so you're a member of the Sons, but you haven't been extremely active in that.
No.
What other are you active in other groups or organizations?
Not now.
Mm-hmm.
We were active in the Eastern Star for a number of years.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Going to the Masonic Order.
We go up every once in a while. We up last first Monday of every month. Go up to Bainbridge, and he can. Worthy patron 3 times, he was a grand officer. I was worthy matron, Eastern Star, and I was a grand officer for 3 years. Traveled to nearly every Eastern Star chapter in the state of Washington.
So you were active in the Masons?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going up next Tuesday and getting a 60-year pin at Fort Andes, the Masons.
Okay, so that's been your main, outside the service, that's been your main group, the Mason Order. What about the church life? Have you and your wife been church members or active in a church down through the years?
She has been more than I have. Mm-hmm. I just pay my dues.
Okay.
On Bainbridge Island, I guess she was in the flower business.
For 5 years, I kept the flowers in the church every Sunday. And 2 weeks ago, put the flowers in this Presbyterian church on Sunday. And on Wednesday, I baked all the apples, chopped apple cakes for the senior citizens' luncheon, put that on. And on Sunday, I served the coffee hour before and after church, so I think we're happy enough.
Okay, and you are Presbyterian?
Yes.
Yes, okay. I'd like to talk a little bit about your heritage, Mr. Halvorsen. Have you been back to Norway?
Yes. 75, wasn't it, Snoke? Yeah.
First time was in 75?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about your trip. How'd that go?
Went pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My sister got in touch with one of our so-called distant relatives. And he made an arrangement for everything that went on. And my sister was able to get a place for us to stay in Oslo. So on a certain day we were supposed to leave Oslo. Yeah, we took the bus, didn't we, from there to Stavanger. No, Bergen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We stayed there a few days, and then we got on a steamer from Bergen going up to Trondheim. We stayed in a hotel, and that was all arranged, you know.
Uh-huh. One of your relatives had arranged your trip for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Swain Linne. Matter of fact, Linne is who my grandfather owned.
Mm-hmm.
And this Linde is an offspring from my uncle that lived on the island when I was this big.
A little boy, yeah.
Yeah. So then we take the train from Trondheim, and my sister came up too to meet us. And we go up to Steinkjer at the relatives up there, two or three, I guess. So we stayed in different houses.
Uh-huh. What was it like to be back in Norway after all those years?
Well, I don't know. I didn't get excited over it. I was too old to get excited.
Okay. Had you kept in touch with your relatives or family or people in Norway down through the years?
I got a letter from my sister on my birthday. And I believe we get a card for Christmas. I write her a birthday card in September.
You write it in Norwegian?
No, she writes English.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. Okay. There are very few in Norway now that doesn't write and speak English.
Okay, so that's how you communicate. When you went back over there in 75, did you speak Norwegian?
Linne, Sverre Linne. He's got the same first name as I have. Had to talk Norwegian to him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But his kids, they talk English like anything. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, every time you get a letter from them, it's in English.
Mm-hmm. In America, your name Sverre is a very Norwegian-sounding name. Did people always call you that, or did they make it a nickname, or what were you known as?
Hal.
You were known to the people, your friends and so on, as
Hal. Yeah.
For Halvorsen.
Most on the mail comes Hal.
Hal Halvorsen. So not too many people really call you Sverre?
They don't know how to pronounce it.
Okay.
Have you tried it?
How say it.
Sverre.
Sverre.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty good.
Speaking of Norwegian language, do you have any little thing that you can... Some of the people have a little saying they remember, or a song, or a prayer, or just some little words in Norwegian that you can say for the tape so we can hear you speak a little Norwegian. Is there a little something you could say?
I have my dad, nothing I can remember.
Any short little thing?
Not a thing. Because I lived with her so darn many years, I've forgotten.
You and your wife, you didn't use Norwegian in your home then?
Here?
Yes.
No.
Did your children pick up on the Norwegian heritage at all? The language, or?
No, just some.
Interested in that at all?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you keep in, do you, I see you have a few pictures of Norway, from Norway here. Do you keep up any of the traditions here, you and your wife, at Christmas time or anything like that?
I like to get spikkelsild.
What's that?
Pickled herring.
Pickled herring?
The only tradition is in its eating. Uh-huh. They smoke fish and pickle herring and those sorts of things.
And you have a piece of hardtack here?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What are some of your very favorite foods, would you say? Norwegian foods? The herring?
Yeah, that's only kind of a snack.
Mm-hmm.
In the old country, that was our main meal for the noon meal.
Herring.
A whole herring and boiled potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And oatmeal soup. All healthy stuff. There wasn't a darn piece of additive or anything along with it.
Mm-hmm. So fish and potatoes was pretty much the diet you had over there.
Yeah. You know, different kind of fish.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if you have codfish, you know, fish, there are so many different ways to fix it. They're never the same.
What are some of the different ways? How do you not get tired of codfish? What are some of the things you can do to it?
All right. You get yourself a codfish, and you boil it, and you have potatoes. And if it's the winter time, you'll probably get some liver and fish eggs. It has a meal in itself.
Mm-hmm. Now, why in the winter? Why is?
Well, that's when the fish is all matured, and then you go, say, in February. That's a good month. But you get up to latter part of March and April, and it starts to spawn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's when they lose their innocence.
You like to eat the fish eggs? That's a good part.
Oh, yeah.
How are those prepared then?
They're boiled.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. A little salt. Always salt in it. Never eat the fish without salt.
Uh-huh.
And then, if you have some left over, then you can make up a dish of what they call prokfisk.
And what's that?
Now, you have boiled potatoes. Put it into a pan. Put a little milk in there and kind of mash it up a little bit. Then you put seasoning in there, pepper and so on and so forth. Maybe you put a little milk in there, or butter too for that matter if you want it. And then you take this fish that you had left over, break it into small pieces and stir it up. And then you put it on a plate and then you put homemade butter right in the middle of it.
And that's a treat?
Huh?
And that's a good treat?
Ooh. And then you can have buttermilk along with it. We had all kinds of milk at our place where I grew up.
Mm-hmm. Because you had your own cows and so
on.
Oh,
yeah. We had 8 or 9.
Mm-hmm.
And then another thing that is good is to take whole milk and then let it clabber. The cream will get out this thick, you know, a little cinnamon and sugar on it, and then eat it. Good. And then, if you have more fish left over, then you make fish cakes out of it.
Mm-hmm. Fish cakes?
Fish cakes, yeah.
How are those made?
Well, they're made out of potatoes and fish and so on and so forth, and onions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you still eat codfish? Do you?
Oh,
can you get a good fresh codfish here?
We go to Polspo. When is it?
Tomorrow.
No, when they have that codfish dinner. I don't mean lutefisk, no. I mean.
Around
February or so on.
Sons of Norway has.
And they have, I've heard about the lutefisk dinners, but this is a.
That's fresh.
This is a codfish dinner.
It's a codfish, eggs, and. Liver.
Uh-huh. This is liver from the fish.
Uh-huh.
That's boiled up there too?
Yeah.
Boiled?
Oh, that's boiled, yeah, but it's in chunks.
Uh-huh. And so you go to that in Polsbo?
Yeah.
Is that at, where is that in Polsbo? Sons of Norway?
Sons of
Norway.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you like to remember Norway and the foods then that you eat?
Yeah.
Okay. What are some of your? I saw your shop, your beautiful shop out here, and that looks like a good hobby place. What have been some of your? Is the shop your hobby, or what sorts of things have you done out there?
It is a hobby to a certain extent, but it's also a way for me to get out of the house.
He made all the chairs, and there isn't anything in this world that breaks that he can't fix. And he figures out something to fix everything with, no matter what.
I made all those flower boxes.
So you do lots of woodworking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And those drip pans there, that's my own invention.
Oh. The drip pan that goes with the flower boxes.
Yeah. So when you water the plants, it doesn't drip all over.
Uh-huh. That's a good idea. And you've made your furniture out here, and your shop is very orderly. And you think that comes from your training in the Coast Guard? Or?
Oh, no. We got that in Norway.
Well, tell me about that.
Well, everybody in Norway got a shop of some sort, and everything had to be in order. The early days, you never had electric lights. But if you wanted a tool in the house, you know, to do something, you couldn't turn the switch on. You had to know where it was hanging.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing on the ship. You got to know where each halyard is and each fall and so on and so forth.
So that's part of the reason for being so neat, is just so you know where it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other activities that, did you fish in your retirement? Did you still like to go fishing as a...
No, we had a boat one time on the island there. Used to go out and get some cook fish.
Mm-hmm.
And a few times my son made up a party of about 4 or 5 people. Load up with groceries and so on and so forth. And go out to different places. San Juan Islands, Nia Bay, CQ, so on.
Okay, so you got back to the water a little bit that
way.
Oh,
yeah. So when the trip was over, got in, tied up at the float, the fellows would get the junk bags ashore and said, "Captain, thanks a lot for a good trip." Then it was up to her and I to clean up the boat again.
Okay. You were in Norway in 75, just the one time you went back.
That's right.
Okay. What has it meant to you to be Norwegian in your life? Your Norwegian heritage, what does it mean to you?
It means a heck of a lot. Yeah. In other words, Norway has been independent. They want to be independent, and they mind their own business. They don't go around and say, "Hey, you can't do that." Hip, hip. If you want to do that, let them go ahead. Have you? I don't think you had that. But the story about the Norwegians getting free of the Swede King Oscar II.
How does that go?
At that time, Norway was under the control of the Swedish king. The Swedish king would appoint ambassadors to different countries to represent Norway. In most of the sea ports, he would appoint Swedes to be consuls, to take care of ships that came in, and Norwegian ships, so on and so forth. And Norway had to pay them for what they were doing. And Norway said, "Well, now listen, we have more ships and more trade in foreign countries than you have. How about us appoint ambassadors, so on and so forth?" We said, "No. you're a union with us. Well, let's change that. So let's start to dicker. Sweet says no. And Norma said, well, yes. And in 1905, they came to almost a armed conflict over the argument. But in the meantime, the politicians, Christian something.
We're almost out of.
Huh?
We're almost out of tape.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's all right.
Keep going.
They said, now, we want our own senators, ambassadors, so on and so forth. So they marched to the border, and one morning the sun was out bright as could be, and who do you think rose up from behind the rock pile but Norwegians? Arms across the breast like this. They talked to each other, they were smiling, and the Swede said, hey, look at those guys. They didn't matter. Look at them. They're laughing. They're no guns. So Swede said, oh, the hell with it. Let's go home and tend to our own farms.
That's how Norway.
Okay, yeah. And they selected a prince from Denmark. And his motto was, everything for Norway.
Yeah. And is that the way you feel?
Yeah. U.S. should have the same motto, with the exception that she said, nothing for Russia.
Okay. So, is there anything else you'd like to add about your life before we close off the tape?
No,
would you like to say goodbye in Norwegian?
Adieu.
Thank you very much, Mr. Halvorsen.